Story is told of a young artist who'd been through a cruel period in his life. He experienced poverty, loneliness, and seeming failure in trying to be an artist and earn his living. It got to the point where he told a friend that if I could write a book, I would use the following title, From Ashes to God. For he said, it is only when you have been burned to ashes that you completely find God. Then when everything in you seems to have been extinguished, a new little flame is somehow lighted, and it grows, and it can never be put out. That flame is God. Joseph was obviously a man who had had to find God out of the ashes of his life, if he was to find God at all. And he had to learn to know that God had found him and that God had held him throughout everything he faced. You remember where we've come from so far. We're studying the life of Joseph and we're learning lessons from his life. In the first sermon, we talked about how God had to remove the skeletons from the family closet that Joseph had. That was his first adversity. That he came from a dysfunctional family that included two wives and two families and all the fighting and disruption that took place. We discovered that because of that, Joseph's first adversity was his family heritage. It was a family that was dysfunctional, filled with angry, jealous people who were deceitful and rebellious and who struggled against favoritism. Not just in Joseph's family, but also back through his father's family and his grandfather's family and his great-grandfather's family. We discovered the second adversity was the death of his mother when Joseph was probably around the age of 12. And that death would have been really hard and adverse for Joseph, like it would for any child, but who was going to protect him from the animosity between Leah and Rachel that had developed, and who was going to protect him now? The third adversity was that he was the favorite. Now, that may sound strange. How can adversity cause you to be the favorite? Well, it created some things in Joseph's life that weren't particularly too flattering, as we saw. Joseph had become a person who could be downright irritating at times. He was filled with vanity. He was self-absorbed. And he was oblivious to how he offended others when he retold and told and retold the stories of his dreams and when he wore the coat so prominently. Ellen White states that he had become self-sufficient and exacting. Have you ever known an exacting person? Exacting people are not easy to live with, are they? I think not. And then we know the story of how he had faced the adversity of being hated and betrayed and abandoned by his brother, sold into slavery. And when we last studied the story of Joseph, Joseph was on the trip to Egypt. A trip at the age of 17, which was filled with all kinds of doubts and questions, wondering where was God? How were the dreams that he believed God had given him to be fulfilled of kind of being someone that everybody else looked up to and followed, and what was going to happen to those dreams? Would he ever see his father again? And in the description in Patriarchs and Prophets, Ellen White states that as he was on that caravan going to Egypt, he saw the hills where his father's home was. Can you imagine what that was like? And so Joseph finds himself in Egypt, and he's sold as a slave to Potiphar. Now, there's some details of the story that we don't really know too well, and I want to share some of those details with you, but you remember the story we're going to look at today. It's the story of when Joseph faced the adversity of being attacked for his integrity, when his integrity was questioned, when he was falsely accused, when he was treated unfairly. I want you to think about that story for a moment. Joseph is sold into Egypt, and then it says he found favor with Potiphar. We almost think that that took place immediately. In actuality, it probably couldn't take place immediately for several reasons. We don't know the exact timeline, but it's not until just 2 years, just shortly before, when he's 30 years old, that he goes and is put into prison for what took place with the false accusation by Potiphar's wife. So that means there's 13 years between the age of 13 or 17 and 30 when he's in Potiphar's house. And for Potiphar to take notice of him and to take notice that he was someone who could be trusted would take some time. For him to run Potiphar's household would take some time because he'd have to learn the language of Egypt. And from what I've heard about Egyptian, that probably wasn't very easy to learn. He had to learn the culture of Egypt, what would work and what wouldn't. He needed to learn the custom of how the households ran. He had to learn what Potiphar expected from his servants. He had to learn a whole lot before he could be put in charge, wouldn't he? And so I doubt it was within the first year or two even that he was found favor with Potiphar. And so he's there for some time, and then you know the story of how Potiphar's wife tries to seduce him. I'm not sure seduce is the right word. Command him might be better. I kind of doubt that one day she woke up and said, okay, today I'm going to demand that he sleep with me. There probably had been a number of times when she tried to entice him, because it says that he was a man who was handsome and well-built. Okay, much like Rachel, his mother, the same words are used. Today, if I could be so crude, he would be called a stud. Okay? It's that simple. That's what it's referring to him as. Good-looking, well-built, someone to be desired. And so Potiphar's wife had probably been trying to do some flirting, leaving some clues that Joseph never seemed to respond to, until finally, you know the story, she tells him point blank one day, lie with me. And he says, no, how can I do that and do this wicked thing? Your husband trusts me completely. And how could I do this wickedness and sin against God? And you know the story. Now she's really upset and she's mad and she's offended and she's afraid that Joseph's going to go and tell Potiphar what had happened. So she comes up with the story after enticing him day after day, and he continues to refuse. One day he comes in, and it's a day when suddenly all the men servants are gone from the house. Anybody besides me think that was a planned thing? And she looks at him and she says, come on, it's time, lie with me. And that word lie means to have sexual relationships with someone other than your spouse. And Joseph says, I'm out of here. And he fled, and she grabbed his cloak. And then she called the men servants back in and said, look at here, I've got his cloak. He tried to mock me. And that word mock doesn't mean just laugh at, doesn't mean just tease, doesn't mean just mean make fun of me. It also includes the idea that he tried to have his way with me. And she said, your master brought this Hebrew, said derogatorily, into the house, and look what it's come about. Then she holds on and she stays on her bed and she holds on and lays that cloak beside her so that when Potiphar comes home from overseeing the prison where he was the captain of the guard, Pharaoh's prison, she here's the proof. And she recites almost word for word the very same thing she told the servants. And Potiphar's put in a precarious place. It says his anger was kindled, and he has Joseph thrown in prison. Now, there are some things I just want to talk about that are in the story, that small details that we might overlook sometimes. The first one we've often talked about is that we've already talked about is the fact that it was probably a little bit of time before he was placed in a place of favor by Potiphar in the household. The fact that he had to learn the language and the culture. But I want you to notice that it says that God was with him and blessed him, and that Potiphar even noticed that his God was with him. Now, what's significant about that is Potiphar is serving Pharaoh. And in Egypt, Pharaoh himself was considered to be what? A god. For Potiphar to notice that Joseph's God was with him was also to notice that there was a difference between Joseph's God and the gods of Egypt, including Pharaoh himself. Something else we often overlook. It says that Potiphar didn't worry about one thing in his household except what he ate. Now, at first glance, might be, I wonder what's on the menu for this morning or for this evening. It wasn't what was on the menu, it was what was in the menu he was worried about. He was, after all, the captain of the guard of the Pharaoh's prison. He was, after all, an executioner. And it was not uncommon for those in those kind of positions to have someone seek revenge and to put something in their food. And that could be done unbeknownst even to his trusted servant, Joseph. So he had no thought about anything in his household except, will I make it through lunch? Will I make it through supper? Do you get the point? And another thing that we often overlook in the story, it says that when Potiphar's wife tells Pharaoh, Potiphar's wife tells Potiphar what Joseph had done, what she accused him of doing, it says his anger was kindled. He became really mad. Now, what's interesting is it doesn't say he was angry at Joseph. It doesn't say he was so angry at Joseph, this is what he did. It just says he was angry. And it may be he was angry at the situation. It may be he was even angry at his wife. Because you see, for a slave to be basically accused of attempted rape of the master's wife was an automatic death sentence at that time. Potiphar should have, had every right to, and as an executioner himself, he would think nothing bad about saying, okay, Joseph, your history. Why didn't he do that? Many commentators, and Ellen White says the same thing, believe that Potiphar never bought his wife's story. Didn't believe it. He trusted Joseph so much and knew Joseph so well, he knew Joseph wouldn't do that. He also knew about his wife. It was not uncommon in Egyptian at that time for women to have a number of affairs who were married, especially within the courts of the Pharaoh. He wasn't surprised this had taken place. And so he just has him put in prison. We'll cover that in 2 weeks. He has him put in prison. When he goes to prison, as we'll see towards the end, he finds favor real quickly with the guard of the prison, who, by the way, is under Potiphar's rule. Potiphar's his boss. In less than 2 years, he is in charge of the prison. Do you think that's just a coincidence? And certainly God was involved in that. I don't dispute that at all. But isn't it very highly likely that Potiphar himself was kind of pulling the strings as a way of letting Joseph know that he knew what had really taken place? And still, it couldn't have been easy for Joseph to go from being in a place where you were favorite son to hated brother to abandoned and sold into slavery. It couldn't be easy to go from being favored servant, trusted implicitly by his master, to being imprisoned one more time and accused falsely. It couldn't have been easy, could it? It's easy to think, oh, Joseph knew God and it wasn't easy. And so Joseph goes from being favored one more time to being in disfavor one more time. How was it that Joseph was able to deal with all this adversity? I want you to think with me a little bit about how people handle the times when they're mistreated by others. Most people do it one of three ways. They either take the role of a victim. Look what they've done to me. I can't help what happens now. After all, it's their fault. They've treated me badly. They've hurt me. They deserve whatever's coming to them. But hey, I'm stuck. I might as well just give in. Or they take the role of entitlement. All this bad stuff's happening to me, and somebody owes me, and I'm going to take whatever thing I've got coming to me that I can. I'm going to grab at whatever gift comes my way. I'm going to prove that I'm valued by making sure that somebody gives me something along the way. Or they take the role of a bully. They mistreated me. I'll show them. I'll get back at them. You know what's really sad? Is that so many times someone who's been abused, either physically or even sexually, often becomes an abuser themselves. Instead of seeing how hurtful that is, they continue on that whole thing of abuse, that whole cycle, and do it to others. You've all seen people on the kids on the playground, how there's a bully there, and usually you find out when what's going on in the bully's life is that they've been bullied themselves by somebody else. When people have been mistreated, they often either take the role of a victim, the role of somebody who's entitled, or the role of a bully. Joseph didn't do that. Now, I don't know when during those 13 years it all came together for him. I don't know when he figured out how to handle his misfortune, the treatment that he had gotten that he didn't deserve. I don't know when he came to grips with all that. It wasn't an easy thing, but somewhere there he did, because if he hadn't, he would never have been able to show Potiphar that he was someone who could be trusted. You don't trust people who take the role of victims. You don't trust people who take the role of being entitled. You don't trust people who are bullies. You only trust people who are able to interact with others in a healthy way. Does that make sense? How did Joseph do it? There are clues. There are clues. The first clue is found in chapter 39, verse 2, page 33 in your pew Bibles. It says, "The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master, and his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord caused all he did to succeed in his hands. So Joseph found favor in his master's sight, attended him, and he made Joseph overseer of his house." The Lord was with Joseph. As much as Joseph came from a dysfunctional family, he also came from a family who know God in spite of their dysfunction. Joseph had to have recalled some of the stories that his father Jacob had surely told him, stories about Abraham and Isaac, and his own stories of how God had interacted in Jacob's life. I want you to think about this. In Genesis chapter 21, it mentions that Abimelech came and talked to Abraham one day and told Abraham, "I have observed that God is with you and blesses you." Again, a foreign idol-worshipping king notices the God of Abraham. Throughout the story of Abraham, there was the promise that God would bless him and that God would be his God, right? In the story of Isaac, not once but twice in Genesis chapter 22, it mentions, first of all, that God told Isaac, "I will bless you and be with you." Second, Abimelech, and that may be a title of a king or it may be the name of the king himself, but Abimelech, and it might be the same one or a different one, we're not sure. Abimelech talks to Isaac and says, "I've seen your God bless you too." And then there's the whole story of Jacob. When Jacob is fleeing from his brother Esau, who wants to kill him, and he flees and he runs and he's going pell-mell across the wilderness, and he's so tired he lays down with his head on a stone. And then he has this dream of God coming down from heaven and promising to bless him and be with him. And Jacob told Joseph the stories over and over again of his relationship with God and how God had been with him. The Lord was with Joseph. You don't have to be guessing too hard to figure out that Joseph had come to the point somewhere along the way, as he was on his way to Egypt or in Potiphar's household, in the servants' quarters, he came to the realization that he was going to accept the God of his fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that he was going to listen to the God of his fathers, that he was going to trust the God of his fathers in spite of circumstances. In spite of circumstances. Doesn't mean it was easy for him to do that, but he came to that place. How much he forgave his brothers, I don't know. No one does. But he had to have done some kind of forgiveness. And yet, as we will see in the story, and as the story develops, some of the old wounds are reopened down the road, and the forgiveness issue comes up again. See, we have this idea sometimes that if once you forgive, you're done with it. Whatever took place has to be behind us. But events often come up that bring up the event over and over again, and forgiveness must be reissued. Sometimes on a deeper level. I want you to notice the master saw that the Lord was with him. And then it says this. He caused everything he did to succeed in his hands. Now, there's two kinds of success. There's a success as we rank view it. Someone is wealthy, they're successful. Someone has rank, power, they're successful. Someone has fame, they're successful. There's another kind of success, and it's the kind of success that you are able to do that which you set out to do. An amateur artist paints a picture. And it may not be hanging in a museum, but they were successful because they completed it. A child draws a picture for mom, and she celebrates the success by putting it on the refrigerator. You understand what I'm saying? The success that's being taught here is not success in terms of achievement, but success in terms of accomplishing that which he chose to do. Joseph chose not to focus on his circumstances, but to focus on his God. Joseph chose not to focus on the bad things that had happened to him, but on the blessings that God had promised him. Joseph chose to focus on not what someone could do for him, but how he could serve others. And because of that, he experienced success. I want you to notice the next part of the story that's important for understanding what took place in with Joseph. It begins with verse 7. Potiphar's wife cast her eye on Joseph and said, "Lie with me." But he refused, and notice what he said. "Behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house, and he has put everything that he has in my charge. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" Do you notice that Joseph has to deal with the adversity of becoming a favorite again? Potiphar is treating him like a favorite, and yet, because he's being treated like a favorite, Potiphar's wife thinks, since Potiphar trusts him anyway, I know we can get by with this. But I want you to notice the change in attitude that is apparent here with Joseph. When he was the favorite at home, he talked about what he had. He wore the coat. He told the dreams over and over again. Here, he says, "Behold, my master." It's about my master. It's about my master. It's not about him. Joseph seems to have developed a new humility. He's developed more a heart for serving others. Joseph seems to have thought and prepared for, it's not about what happens here, it's about what happens in eternity. It's not that Joseph had a stronger backbone than you and I. Joseph had a stronger relationship. More than a stronger backbone. A stronger relationship with God. Joseph could not, in that moment of temptation, simply say, "How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God," if he didn't know the God he was sinning against? Right? He wouldn't have known how egregious this would be to God if he didn't know the kind of God he served. It never says that Joseph had a relationship with God and that protected him, but it is there, is it not? It wasn't his backbone, it wasn't his willpower that enabled him to overcome the temptation and to flee from the temptation. It was he developed a relationship with God that said, "God and his reputation is more important than me and my reputation. It's more important than me and my moment of pleasure. It's more important than me and that which I have and that which I do." There's one more part of the story we want to look at briefly this morning. After Potiphar's anger is kindled, I believe, against his wife, after he says, "I'm going to put him in jail," notice chapter 39, verse 20. It says, "Joseph's master put him in the prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, so that Joseph Potiphar could protect him," I believe. Notice verse 21, "But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. And the keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge, because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed." Do those words sound slightly familiar? They were the same words that were said about Joseph when he was beginning to come under the favor of Potiphar. When his fortunes had been changed, when things were looking good, these words were said about Joseph. And now when he's put in the prison, the very same words are used to describe Joseph's life. The Lord was with Joseph. The Lord was with Joseph. and showed him his steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. Gave him favor in the sight of Potiphar. You see, as Christians, we often look at our circumstances and God's blessing up us if things are going well, and where is God when things aren't? God's with us if everything's hunky-dory, but we're not so sure if God's with us if we face adversity in our lives. God's with us if we can count the blessings one by one, but we're not sure he's with us if there's not a blessing to be seen. Do you understand what I'm saying? Joseph was the same during a time of favor as he was in a time of disfavor. Joseph was the same in the time of prosperity as in the time of adversity. Joseph was the same regardless of circumstance, because the one unchanging thing in Joseph's life was the Lord was with him. And obviously the opposite is true. He was with the Lord. The one unchanging thing in his life was the Lord was with Joseph. So this morning, I want to ask you a couple questions. Do you know that the Lord is with you this morning? Good or bad times? Do you know the Lord is with you? Are there others nearby who may not even know God, who have seen God and seen God's steadfast love at work in and through your life? Are you a person of integrity who recognizes that anything that God has prohibited for us is in our best interest? And that whatever we do, even though it may hurt us or others, ultimately it is a sin against God himself. Finally, are you experiencing success in your life? Are you achieving those things that you believe God has called you to achieve? Is there a transformation taking place in your character? Are you revealing Christ to others? Are you able to do what you set out to do, asking God to bless it? There's nothing wrong with that. But whatever takes place in your life, unless you know you belong to God and that God is with you, when good things happen that make you a favorite, or bad things happen which make you a disfavorite, if I can use that word, are you unmoved because you know the Lord is with you and that he loves you and that he will give you favor with others? Not because life is smooth, but sometimes even when life is rough. And it's ironic that sometimes when life is rough is when we really find out if we really believe that God is with us. The lesson of the life of Joseph is not just that he was able to withdraw and flee from temptation. The lesson from the life of Joseph is primarily this. And it's the lesson we need to learn. If God is with me, who can be against me? If God is with me, what can destroy me? If God is with me, what can ruin my life? May you live within the awareness that God is with you and that he gives you his steadfast love, and that he grants you favor. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for the privilege of knowing that you long to be with us. That you are with us when times that are good and times that are bad. That you are with us in spite of circumstances. That you are with us when we are hurting and desperately in need. That you are with us when we are being shown favor and prosperity. Help us to know that knowing that you are with us is that which will be the anchor of our lives. regardless of what we face. In Jesus' name, amen.